Hey, Anna, have you been to the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum?
Yes, but I'm guessing not as often as you've been.
Well, you know, I kind of am a regular. I have a
like a parking space.
They have a parking spot. They have the. I'm in the keep looking up program. And,
oh
no, but you, have you been? Have
yes,
you been?
Yes. When, I went when I was a little kid.
Really?
Who goes as an adult, Dean?
Cool adults, that's for sure. Adults with cool passions.
That's right. Totally cool. Yes, I've been, and it's an amazing place. My parents were very much into the educational vacation.
Really?
So, yeah. Oh, yeah.
This wasn't a school trip. This
no,
was
I went. Exactly. We went like
family.
Oh yeah, of course.
Oh, what do you remember the most about it?
I love that they had these big giant planes just like chilling inside a building.
Yeah.
I thought that was actually really cool.
Planes in a building.
Like, well, I was easily amused.
I mean, that's the thing. They have such great visuals at this place. I remember the big rockets. They had like the rockets that were standing
right
up. Like they even had to like sink in the ground so they could fit in the roof. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought the rockets were the coolest things. But then,
do you still think that? Come on. I like that you say it like it's past tense. Like, I used to think when I was a kid. You think that now.
Okay. They're pretty cool. They're pretty cool. That's for sure. I mean, that's what it's there for.
Right.
And that's the thing. Like, kids of all ages, even adults go, we need to go again. We need
yes
to go again. We'll go together. I can show you all the, I know all the
secret
places.
I'll block off 2 days.
Yeah.
Show you. Great. Let's do it. Sold.
Awesome. From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm Dean Regas from the Cincinnati Observatory, and this is Looking Up.
And I'm Anna Heeman, and I'm also from the Cincinnati Observatory, where Dean's the astronomer, and I have lots of questions. In this episode, we're going to talk with the new director of the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum, Ellen Stofan. So I'm really excited to talk to Ellen Stofan today about the Air and Space Museum, but you're probably more excited.
Well, no, I mean, just think about it. She's the in charge of, like, one of the biggest museums in the world.
Didn't you do some research that it's, like, the busiest museum?
Yeah, I mean, millions of people going through there.
That's
every
crazy
single year. And, you know, not just kids, adults too do that too. Now, so we have a kind of our
adults with their kids.
That's right.
Just kidding.
So we have a smaller version, you know,
that's right,
in town here.
Yes.
One that has near and dear to you, right?
Of course. And that's the Cincinnati Observatory, obviously.
Well, yeah.
We're just a teeny tiny, but equally important air and space museum.
Yeah.
Well, and it's a, you know, that's our busy time.
Yes.
Which is all the time, but summer is very busy for us.
Yeah, and it used to not be that way. You know, when I started, summers was always the slow time, and people, you know, because schools were out and people would be on vacations. But I think, you know, it's like, it's kind of cool that we're now part of this like regional go-to place for astronomy.
Oh, yeah.
And so we get visitors from all around the Midwest and then from other places, too. And so when they come, what do you think, like, strikes people the most? Because, you know, we talked about Smithsonian, and you like the planes inside. What do you think people like the most from us?
I think that what they like the most is, A, that our building is – our buildings, but mainly our larger building is – stunningly beautiful. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's weird to say about a building, but it is. And the other thing is that they are surprised at how big the scopes are. I almost said at the scope of the scope.
The scope
doesn't make
of
any
the
sense.
Scopes. Yes.
I mean, like how big they are.
Yep.
Like I think they're expecting something like, you know, a little more manageable. They're like, oh my gosh, it's this humongous and incredible instrument.
Well, instead of a plane in a building, it's a 22-foot-long and 16-foot-long telescope in a building.
That's right. What do you think they like about coming to?
Well, yeah, I think you're right. I think it's the building is it's this step back in time when you turn that corner onto that street, and it's you see the building at the end of the street that's framed by the trees and everything like that.
That's
it
true.
Looks like it's from some mythical place that, you know, and that's kind of what we are. We're kind of a throwback. There's not many 19th century observatories around the country. And, that would be a good show. We should do a show on 19th century observatories around the country.
What? I mean, yes, absolutely. Let me go write that right now.
It would be kind of short. There's only about three.
So. Well, we'll work on it. And that we're, I think, are the fact that we're, I always say that we're a 19th century observatory, you know, 1800s, and we still work in this building every day that somebody built is like, I think it's crazy.
Isn't that cool?
It's very cool.
Yeah. So I think the other thing that, well, for me, the main showcase of the buildings is the telescope, the Mitchell telescope, the oldest one in the country.
That's like your baby.
Yeah. I mean, if you can be in love with an inanimate object, it's pretty close. I don't want to go that far, but it's pretty close.
I think the bell has been rung. Yeah. But okay, we won't go that far.
That's right. But it's that scope is just amazing. It's just, there's nothing like it. It's,
it's true.
Made out of wood and brass. Mm-hmm. 16 feet long, 11 inches in diameter. The tube, I mean, I was working there for years before I even figured out how the tube is built. And I still don't think I know how the tube is built.
You mean like if it was a hollowed out tree trunk or
right.
not?
Right. I thought it was a hollowed out tree
Me
trunk.
Me too.
That's not true.
But there's no seam on it.
Exactly.
Like where is the seam, Dean?
That's the whole thing. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. This was magically built. It was built by woodworkers with skills that,
incredible skills.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the fact that, like, we test it out. We shine a laser through the lens, and it still hits pretty much dead center after 173 years.
It's insane.
So, but man, I hope the Smithsonian doesn't, like, I hope she doesn't, like, get her eyes on the scope, and she wants it for the Smithsonian.
Just don't mention it. Just
I won't
feel
mention
like we
it.
Just have old telescopes.
Oh, yeah, we got
nothing
of interest that you would want, because, you know.
Don't worry about it.
Just
this
crummy old telescope.
That's right, crummy old telescope.
That we use every single day.
Exactly. That's a national treasure.
It's a national treasure.
The oldest public telescope still in use.
That's a good point.
You know the unsung hero of the observatory, though, besides me, is... Wait, what?
Well, self-sung, maybe.
Right. I had to post my own birthday message on our Facebook, but anyway, that's neither here nor there.
I liked it.
Yeah, that's appreciated.
I think I said keep looking up.
Yeah, I think you're like, oh, yeah. Is the cone dome.
Yeah,
I seriously love the cone dome.
Yeah, I mean.
And it has no functional purpose,
it really
doesn't.
It's one of those really weird things that were added onto the building. And so we have two buildings on site. One's the main one that you see when you drive on up. And then there's a secondary building that has two domes in it. And so the building was started in 1904. That's when they put the telescope in. And then they added this wing and a second dome that's shaped like an inverted ice cream cone.
It's adorable.
As far as I can tell, there's no other observatory that has a cone-shaped dome like
really?
That. I have not found it anywhere.
That's not nearly enough in our marketing.
Oh, yeah.
It's huge.
Well, so the story is that was set up to view comets. So you put a telescope in there, and it was specifically designed to view comets. And the reasoning behind it makes absolutely no sense. Like, the salesman must have snowed those guys pretty good. They're like, oh, yeah, well, you're going to find lots of comets at this one. Oh, yeah.
Just trust me.
You have so many comets coming out that your ears is going to be crazy. And it makes no sense.
God.
Because
it's all lies.
It was because you couldn't, the dome doesn't open straight overhead. The main dome blocks 20% of the sky.
That is kind of funny.
And it is funny. So now we have this unusable space that we can't change because we're a National Historic Landmark. But and so
still looks cute, though.
And so surprise, surprise, how many comets have we discovered in that room?
I'm going to say zero, but I don't like how you're talking about the cone dome right now.
Well, yeah.
It's so petite.
It is.
It is useless, but that's okay.
Petite and useless.
Petite and useless.
That's a good... No. It's
adorable.
So if people come visit and you ask about the cone room, we don't usually show it to people because it's so small and cramped. And it's kind of hot. Yeah, but it's pretty cool to see. And because everything in there works. The telescope works. The roof works. So you can still view out of it.
80% of it.
Just 80% of the sky. That's right. Yeah.
That's right. It's neat, though, and I like it.
Yep. Well, so the other thing we want to talk about was the summer planets. We've got lots of things for people to see. Remember, we were going to talk about that?
I forget.
We rehearsed this. Remember?
I did.
This part?
I'm sorry.
So summer planets. So since we're looking at the summer and everybody wants to do some things to look for, well, planets are going to be the big thing. We've got Venus already.
Totally.
Pretty good.
Very exciting.
We got Jupiter starting here this month. So
King
Jupiter's in awesome shape. Very good. We got Saturn. What's its nickname?
The ringed planet.
Ringed planet, very good.
The best thing to see through a telescope, probably.
That is correct. When Saturn, best thing to see in a telescope because you just see this little tiny planet with the rings around it.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be best viewed in late June, early July, and then all the way through August.
We're having an event for that.
We are, yeah. July 21st. Oh, good, good.
I got it.
And then the red planet comes back.
Yes.
And what's the red planet?
Mars.
Okay, just making sure you got your notes.
I was like, aren't they all red? Sorry. No, it's all right. Mars. I'm sorry. I know it's Mars.
Okay, right, right.
Calm down.
So yeah, red planet comes back, closest approach to Earth in 15 years.
Huge deal.
And it'll be July 27th is the closest approach. But if you read about like these, when they say the planets are at their closest, you don't have to come that day. In fact, please don't come that day because last time we had a big Mars event the closest approach, we had like 1,500 people show up. So if you come the day after or the day before, you're going to get the same view, just a lot fewer people.
Oh.
So at any time the week before or week after July 27th, that's pretty good. Even if you go a few weeks after, you'll still be good.
Way to do pre-crowd control.
I try.
Don't show up on Friday.
Don't come up on – it's a Friday. Come on Saturday.
If you do come, ask for Dean Regas.
Yes.
He'd be happy to just show you right around.
That's right.
I'll be busy.
We'll bring you right to the front of the line and you can look through it. But yeah, there's so many planets. So check out your local observatory, planetarium, science center. And see what kind of views they got because you got to see these planets through the telescopes.
Oh, for sure.
It's one of the most popular museums in the United States. It's the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. As an astronomer, this makes like total sense to me because, well, space is awesome. But we're very excited to welcome the brand new director of the museum, and she's also the former chief scientist at NASA, Ellen Stofan. Well, Ellen, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Now, so Anna and I have been talking about how we visited the Smithsonian as kids.
Mm-hmm.
So did you visit as a kid?
You know, I did. I visited, you know, given my age, I visited not that long after the museum opened. And of course, embarrassingly, the first time I came to the Washington, the museum was actually not yet open. But
what?
I did.
Wait a second. Wait. I thought this like opened 1850 something or whatever.
Oh my gosh. Well, obviously the Smithsonian did, but the National Air and Space Museum, our building on the mall, opened in 1976, July 4th, as a matter of fact.
Oh,
all right.
Bicentennial.
There we go. Now we know your age.
Exactly,
no, I'm just kidding.
Exactly. So our downtown museum has been here for quite some years, but I came here as a kid, and my dad worked for NASA. So to me, you know, it was not just this amazing place that had this huge family connection, so it was really inspiring. And then I actually worked at the museum after my sophomore year in college as an intern.
Oh, wow. So that's a long-term relationship. And well, so then the question I had is, did you, as a kid, you're walking around there and looking at the place, did you say to yourself, someday I'm going to run this place?
Or as an intern.
Boy, I could really run this place a lot better.
You know, I really didn't. And I don't know if it was because, to some extent, that wasn't a job that I saw a lot of women doing. Or if it was certainly that I just really didn't kind of set my sights that high. You know, the idea of working there as a researcher at Air and Space here as a researcher was something that I could have easily imagined myself doing because I really loved working here. But working here as the director was just not something that I even thought about.
Wow. So now that you do work there, now that you run the museum, what would you say is your favorite item in the collection or your favorite part of the museum?
You know, that question, you know, because I have three children and, you know, they're always trying to manipulate me to tell, you know, get them me to say which one of them is my favorite. And of course, I love all of my children. And at NASA, people would say, what's your favorite mission? And I love all of my children. And so, of course, I love all of my children, both in our downtown museum and Udvar-Hazy. But I'll give you a couple because I'm not going to pick one.
That's fair.
One is certainly the spirit of St. Louis. You know, to me, that's that kind of individual American spirit. You know, I'm gonna do something amazing. You know, I'm gonna push the envelope. And with Charles Lindbergh and the story, that story I really love. And so to see that airplane every day is really a thrill. And of course, I love the Apollo artifacts we have. Neil Armstrong's suit is to me, it's awe-inspiring. One of the coolest things about that suit, which is currently being conserved because the suits weren't made to last this long, there's actually from the knees down, the suit is actually kind of grimy. And the reason it's grimy is because lunar dust is incredibly fine because it's gone through so many cycles of being impacted. And so the suit is literally embedded with lunar dust.
Oh, wow.
And so you're standing there in front of it, and you're like, oh, wow. It's
just, that's moon
it's
stuff.
It's really awe-inspiring. And so, yeah, exactly. You're like, this is amazing. And so it's those. But the thing I love about this place is there is no other place on Earth that has these artifacts that really tell the story of humans defying gravity and getting off the planet from, the Wright brothers plane through the Spirit of St. Louis all the way up to Neil Armstrong and Neil Armstrong's suit and beyond.
Well, speaking of how the items, these very rare and historic items, how do you acquire items? Is there, do you like have your eyes set on things? You're like, oh boy, that would look good in the museum. How are we going to get it?
You know, it's a combination of things. We certainly get items donated, from the public, which we obviously love. People's things, obviously from pilots over the years who set records or who have an outstanding aircraft that they want to give to us, personal belongings. We actually have a huge art collection, which I really love. On the space side, we historically get sort of first right of refusal of NASA artifacts. So we have a large collection of that, of, things from NASA. So it's an embarrassment of riches, really, that come from all sides. And certainly different companies that produce either space or aviation items have also been, artifacts have been incredibly generous with the museum, from aerospace companies, airline companies, et cetera. So we really get artifacts from a huge range of sources.
When most people probably associate the museum, it's on the mall there in Washington, D.C., but there's also your offsite location at, near Dulles Airport. That one is, there you got a lot of extra space for these big items like planes and that type of thing.
Yeah, so I always really want to see, we get about 8 million visitors a year at our downtown museum and
whoa,
about a million,
million
and a half. Yeah, we are. Sort of in competition with the Louvre for the most visited museum in the world.
Oh, so, man.
But our Udvar Hazy gets about 1.5 million visitors a year. But some of our coolest stuff is out at Udvar Hazy. So, you really want people to go out there and visit, too, because we have, things like the Space Shuttle Discovery, just something people might want to see, which is amazing. You talk about being awed by Neil Armstrong's suit. Here's the space shuttle that's literally been to space and back numerous times, sitting in front of you in all of its glory and all of its dings and hard use. We have an SR-71 that has to be the coolest looking airplane ever, an F-14. The Concorde. We have amazing aircraft, a Sopwith Camel from World War I. So Udvar Hazy has so many gems that you could spend a day in there and not hear the story of every artifact we have out there.
That's incredible. So I don't want to make you pick any more favorites or put you on the spot in that way, but we were curious about any kind of upcoming plans that you're excited about or future exhibits that are going to be really interesting for the public. Can you give us a little sneak peek of what's coming up that you're excited about?
Well, I have to tell you, the biggest thing that we are working on right now is the fact that our downtown museum was built in the early 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of issues with the stone on the outside of the museum. It all has to come down and be replaced.
Oh, wow.
Our heating and cooling systems were designed for about 1 million visitors a year in the 1970s.
Uh-huh, oh, my gosh.
Yep.
And so the museum has been, pretty hard used. And so starting in the fall, we're going to start what we call revitalization and transformation. So revitalization is the federally funded, basically, repair and, rejuvenation of the building itself. It'll take 7 years. We're going to do it half. We're going to start with the west end and then do the east end. So half the museum will be closed, the other half will be open. So we will never entirely shut the museum down during this whole process. But we will close about half the galleries while we do that work on that end of the building, and then switch the other half in about 3 years and reopen the other half. So it's giving us the opportunity, which we're incredibly excited about, to transform the galleries. Some of our galleries are newer. Some of them are a little tired. So we have the opportunity to do some conservation work that's needed on some of the artifacts. We're going to put some of the artifacts on display in storage. We're going to bring some new artifacts that have not been shown before out into the public view. And so it's really this amazing, exciting process that's going to be taking place. And we really want to bring the public along with us. We're never going to close the museum again. It'll stay open. Maybe their favorite item won't always be on display. We are certainly making sure that our wildly popular items like the Wright Flyer and the Spirit of St. Louis are always available for people to see. But, you know, it's going to be an interesting process. And during that time, though, we want to make sure that one of the things we're doing is really reaching out through our digital content. We really do want this to be a museum without walls. So those are the effects of transformation I think that people are going to see sooner is really a lot of how do you visit the museum without actually coming.
So and people can a 3D virtual tours kind of thing?
Yeah. So we're going to say, how can we use technology to really, again, sort of not just transform physically our galleries, but transform how people who can't come to Washington visit the nation's best collection of aviation and space artifacts. And so that's something that I think people will see happening, you know, before the 7 years is up. And so we're really excited about this. It's certainly going to be a process. But it's going to be exciting.
Well, we definitely have to come visit since it's been a while for Anna. She hasn't been since how old?
I was a kid. I was a kid. We'll just say that. Like, I'm sorry, I haven't gone like.
Well,
in the
you
last...
know, I go 12 times every year, but right. That's just me because that's what I do. But
sorry.
But we'll definitely have to make a visit, and maybe the two of us will go and we'll say hi to you and see the
that
spirit of St.
Awesome.
Louis too.
That would be awesome. And I will emphasize that Udvar-Hazy will be unaffected by all this construction.
Oh,
in
yeah.
fact, we'll probably actually be squeezing a few more items onto the floor there for people to see out of the downtown museum during this process. So
I don't know how you park all those planes in that one spot. I mean, it's like there's like a jigsaw puzzle of planes in this hangar.
It is a jigsaw puzzle, and it's going to get even a tighter jigsaw puzzle. But
oh,
we're going to make sure that we're telling these stories. And obviously one of the things that's also, you know, near and dear to my heart is that we're telling all the stories of all the diverse people who've really contributed to aviation and space. So, you know, stay tuned. We are an amazing place, and we're going to become even more amazinger, and I know that's not a word.
Amazing. Sure it is. Sure
I like it.
Well, Ellen, thanks so much for talking with us today. This has been a lot of fun.
Sure. Happy to talk with you.
Up in the mind of a child, and we get lots of kids visiting the Cincinnati Observatory, and Dean meets a bunch of kids during his outreach presentations. So we're going to answer one of their questions, because honestly, a lot of adults are probably wondering the same things, but they just don't want to ask, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And actually, I this is our kid questions segment, but this is actually a question. You know, we always say that we get people that come into the observatory and they're always interested to know about space or the observatory or telescopes. And the other day, the FedEx person, delivery yeah. person was in, and they were, I guess it was like their first time visiting, and he was really excited.
He geeked out a little bit. He was
out.
Like so excited to deliver the package.
But anyway. That's right. And he asked a question that I think is actually a really good question.
All right.
And it was, what is the biggest star that we can have like seen or that we know of, I guess that we can like, I don't know if it's we can view or that we kind of
yes.
is, you know.
And then I pointed to you And I said, there she is, the biggest star right over there.
Okay, we did not plan this, listeners, but that was really well played, Neen.
And by the way, thanks for eavesdropping on my conversation with the FedEx guy. It was a private conversation.
I thought you were in the office. It's not your office.
Okay, that's a good point.
Right. And he was just excited. I thought it was great how excited he was
that's
to be
true.
In the
like, I know. He was like, here's really the cool. package. Okay, now
that's
to the
right.
question.
He was
I don't
like,
care
so through
who
a telescope
you are.
Here?
Take the question.
That's
so
right.
the question, biggest star we could see. Now, that's a tricky one because—
Is it the sun?
The sun is, no, not even close to the biggest star.
What?
The sun is a big star, you know, it's a little bigger than average, mm-hmm. but it is not nearly close to the biggest. I mean, not even in the
really?
Ballpark is the closest. There's two that stand out mm-hmm. in my mind that we look at reasonably often, and that is okay. the star named Antares, mm-hmm. which is a giant red giant star in the heart of the Scorpion constellation, mm-hmm. Scorpius the Scorpion. Mm-hmm. And so Antares is humongous. It mm-hmm. is gigantic.
Like how big is it? How many football fields?
It is, boy, I'm going to have to do some math on that football field.
Oh, man. Well,
we're talking, if this was our star, mm-hmm. the Earth would be circling inside of it. The radius of the diameter of the star would go out past the orbit of Mars, out past the orbit of Jupiter. And so it's, you know, hundreds of millions of miles wide. And our yeah. sun is about 865,000 miles wide, which is pretty big. But mm-hmm. this thing is about 1,000 times bigger than that.
1,000 times bigger than 865,000?
Just by diameter. By volume, it's not even close. We're talking millions of times bigger. Mm-hmm. So Antares is up there. That's one of the biggest stars that we can see.
Okay.
But it may have a rival, and that is the infamous and funny to say name, Beetlejuice. I knew I was waiting for it. I was trying to.
I love that movie. It's really funny.
I was trying to like ease it into you so you wouldn't start
it's
laughing.
It's hilarious.
But, oh, well. Beetlejuice.
Is that really its name?
Yeah, that's its name.
Oh, I thought you were going to be like, okay. Don't say it three times.
There goes professionalism here. Anyway, Beetlejuice is another super giant star, another red giant star.
Okay.
And to add even more to the immaturity level, it's going to come across from the other side of the aisle here.
Oh.
It is the armpit star of the constellation Orion.
What am I supposed to do with that?
There's nothing else you can do. It's
like
true.
Ridiculous.
That's all you got. I know.
Oh my gosh.
So the Beetlejuice.
How big is it then?
How big
an armpit?
It
are
is
we
a
talking?
Huge armpit. I mean, I'm talking gigantic. And again, orbit of Jupiter, possibly bigger. And so these are two stars we're watching very carefully because they actually change their size, they change their brightness, they fluctuate quite a bit. And that means that they're going to explode in the near future.
But don't worry, kids, or FedEx delivery person. Oh, yeah. It's going to be fine.
They're hundreds of light years away. We were perfectly
unstable.
Fine. Oh, yeah. But it would be great to see because when they go, they're going to make this gigantic supernova explosion. That would be so awesome. And all life on Earth will be fine.
Oh, okay.
So that's the
maybe don't bury the lead like that.
Should I start with that?
Maybe start with we'll all be fine.
Yes.
Now we're gonna get a bunch of comments and emails.
Well, you gotta listen to the whole show. That's the thing. You can't just like tune out early.
I can't today.
Well, thanks for the question.
Yeah, excellent question. I just love that there's so much curiosity when people come through our doors. I think it's really cool.
It
kids
awesome.
And adults alike.
Kids and adults.
So sorry for eavesdropping. My bad. That's it for this episode of Looking Up. Big thanks to Ellen Stofan from the National Air and Space Museum for joining us.
And we'd like to hear from you. On social media, you can find us on Facebook. Just search Looking Up WVXU. And on Twitter, we're at Looking Up Podcast. You can also drop us an email at lookingup@wvxu.org.
We'd really love to hear from all our kid listeners. What's your favorite planet? Do you want to live on Mars? Are you worried that a star is going to explode, but we'll be fine? I mean, what would you ask Dean if you could? Or me, but not if you want something about space, probably. So send us an email or post on our Facebook or our Twitter.
And remember to subscribe to Looking Up wherever you listen to podcasts. And give us a rating and comment on iTunes. If you're new to Looking Up, you can always find our past episodes at wvxu.org/lookingup.
Our theme song and additional music is by Y. That's WHY ? From their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Josh Elstro is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.